Next is item the amendment to policy 8.9, the policy on telecommuting or working remotely. Judge Jarr.
Well, good afternoon. Couldn't be more timely if everybody's been following in the newspaper the Yahoo articles.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
When I first read the SEC report when it was released, it contained, of course, a segment relative to the telecommuting policy about which I was unaware, and was unaware that it had been in place for a number of years at the administrative office. As I sat on the sidelines, my first impression, was grounded in my personal experience, both in the court and in private practice. In my court, there were no telecommuters. The judges couldn't telecommute. The court clerks who worked in the court rooms obviously couldn't telecommute, and the balance of the court clerks in my court, as in most, have counter responsibilities routinely. In fact, it struck me that it was interesting that an agency that is the customer service agency for the council as well as for the courts directly and indirectly would have an employment option, a flexibility option, if you will, that wasn't actually generally, I understand, available in the offices of the customers that it serves. From private practice, I knew how valuable our employees were. They essentially determined whether your business, because after all, a private law practice is, among other things, a business, would work or not. And I also knew that the value of productivity is crucial to the maintenance of a small business. You can't rest on your laurels. What happened last month, you have to start over this month or you'll find yourself quickly out of business. So those were the frames of reference that I brought to the reading of the segment of the report pertaining to telecommuting from my view at home. And my initial surmise was telecommuting can't make work more productive, but it certainly could degrade the quality of the work. And it seems to me, perhaps, though the recommendation was to bring it into compliance and propose amendments, that maybe the best outcome is to simply discontinue the policy. When I later came into this position, I honestly thought, in fact, that this would be among the easier decisions or recommendations that I was to make. The first step I took was call a couple of trusted friends who were higher up in management of two large private concerns, asked to speak with them in confidence about telecommuting, expecting, I think, to have my impressions confirmed. And what I learned was quite to the contrary. I learned, to my surprise, that telecommuting is a widespread practice adopted broadly throughout the private sector, and that the private sector embraces it. At that point, I turned to Ken, who I have come to trust significantly during the period of time that I've worked here, for research to assist me in making an assessment. And what I learned was, and what the materials I believe you've been provided summarize, is that if you have a prudently designed and managed program of teleworking or telecommuting, productivity is, in fact, improved. Better concentration, less interruption. It also reduces absenteeism. Now, that sounds a bit ironic because the notion is that a person's absent when they're telecommuting. Well, of course, in fact, they're not absent from work. But absenteeism is reported to be reduced. Probably as important is employees are retained more effectively. And the reason for that is, of course, we live in a competitive world in which the very employees for whom we compete are in a workplace where telecommuting is very much in evidence. The public sector information was similar. The public sector later adopted telecommuting after the private sector and still doesn't embrace it at the levels the private sector has. Both the federal government and the state of California have endorsed and embraced telecommuting. In fact, a number of years ago, to my surprise, I learned that the government code had been amended to set forth that public policy that not only is it an option, but it's embraced, in fact, as a work process for employees of the state of California. Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics has performed analyses which validate the private sector findings regarding productivity and retention. These studies also have some cautionary admonishments, if you will. Isolation, depending on the way you design your program, can create a real problem both in terms of the absence of cross-pollination and collaboration, which itself can be constructive and productive, and also it can, if misarranged, retard the otherwise appropriate promotion of skilled employees. The conclusions that I drew personally from what I learned was that assuming you have a well-designed and well-monitored program of telecommuting, assuming that a particular job description of an applicant lends itself to telecommuting, and obviously not all do, and assuming there are no performance issues respecting the specific applicant at hand, the employer is benefited, and thus the customers are benefited, by the presence of an active, regular telecommuting program. So, armed with that surprising conclusion, I turned to the policy that has been in place for some time and apparently has gone through some permutations over time, policy 8.9, which is, I think, your first attachment. And I discovered that, in at least my judgment, as a former draftsperson of instruments of one kind or another, that it was, at least in my view, seriously flawed and extraordinarily deficient. The present policy provides for two forms of telecommuting: regular scheduled telecommuting and what is called ad hoc telecommuting. The regular scheduled telecommuting is defined to mean that the office head, the director in most instances, of the offices in the agency would make the first and final decision, that he or she could extend the privilege to telecommute for up to 8 days per month. Nothing more specific than that in terms of how the days would be organized, but up to 8 days per month. But that's really not the restriction, because the policy itself calls out that exceptions may be made at the discretion of the office director. In other words, the way this policy is established, office directors can, for example, approve an application to telecommute 100% of the time and fall within compliance of the policy. Not the spirit of the policy, but its letter. There's an ad hoc policy also for what is identified as temporary telecommuting. Broken pipe, plumber's coming, got work at home, may I please stay at home? Yes, ad hoc telecommuting. But there's no definition for it. There's no indication of restriction. There's no indication whether it can piggyback on top of regularly scheduled telecommuting. In short, when you look at the definition of these two, or perhaps more properly the absence of structure associated with these two forms, the exception swallows the rule. Not only do the provisions of the current policy contain those flaws, at least as I see them, but there's no requirement in the current policy that the telecommuting employee prepare any kind of record or work log, time slips, private attorneys comes to mind, nothing like that. There's no performance review structure set out in the policy other than that you annually reapply. But that itself is not even a directive. It's sort of a suggestion. There's no agency monitoring process. There's no centralized organization through, for example, the HR office. And so we really can't collect data that's reliable and understand the progress of the program, its content, or how productive the members of the agency who are telecommuting are becoming. So with that in mind, I set out to develop a modified proposed policy for your consideration consistent with the directives of the council following the E&P public disclosure process. My goal, among others, was to err on the side of stringency. The proposed policy, which is your second attachment, creates a different application process. The office director is the place where the application is lodged by the manager supervisor, who reviews it as submitted by the applicant employee, and if the office leader supports granting regular scheduled telecommuting privileges, then the application materials go to our human resources office so that they are considered in the same light that applications from any other office throughout the agency are considered. for completeness and accuracy and conformity with the rule. If deemed by HR to be in compliance in those particulars, then, per our proposed policy, the application is forwarded to the administrative director or the administrative director's designee for approval or disapproval. In other words, the judgment of the office director is itself judged under this proposed policy. Some additional features I think are germane for your consideration are that this proposed policy will disallow regular telecommuting to anyone who has supervisory responsibilities. Supervisors and managers are not eligible. There are counterarguments relative to the capacity of supervisors to supervise even if they themselves participate. My view is that at this juncture, one should err on the side of caution. If one has responsibility to oversee multiple employees each day, even if he or she is gone one day, that, to me, is a risk not worth taking, at least at this juncture. The proposed features also include that you may not, in any case, be granted telecommuting privileges for more than one day per week. It was suggested, in fact, that we add the words "in any given week" to make it abundantly clear that there weren't fungible days involved, and that has been included. Now, why one day per week? It is arguably arbitrary, but I hold the firm view, as some of the Yahoo proponents hold, that cross-pollination and interaction are in and of themselves constructive and productive and improve the operation of an entity so that any telecommuting program has to be balanced in a rational way. I think you start with one day a week. Maybe that's where you end. Maybe you discover that the optimum number is one click higher. Maybe there's something even more flexible to be considered. But at the beginning, that's my recommendation. The proposed policy also says no exceptions. The office director can't say, unless I give you more. There are no exceptions under any circumstances. Further features include that the teleworker, who by definition works from home, must be working from a home that's in the state of California. The voters of the state, through their legislators, have not only authorized but endorsed telecommuting, but I think there's an implication in there that they expect that the taxpayer dollars that pay the wages or salary of the workers will be recirculated within our own state. And we have policies relative to outside of the state travel that seem to mirror that public policy view. Also, no one would be eligible until they have served in the administrative office as an employee for at least a year. That may be too stringent, but my notion is that you want to make dead sure that you know the characteristics of the staff members who are going to be authorized to telecommute. I want the person who, when driving down that rural road coming to a cross intersection with stop signs and nobody else in sight, is going to make a full boulevard stop. I will also note that the proposed policy reiterates, and I say reiterates because, to be fair to the current policy, it contains this language too, that you must be available as a telecommuter during the workday to the same extent as if working in the office. What that means is, if an applicant cannot demonstrate his or her availability telephonically or by email to the same extent that he or she will be available the other 4 days of the business week, then the application has to be declined. If a teleworker proves himself or herself not equivalently available by those means, then his or her telework privilege must be suspended or perhaps terminated. A daily work log is now required of teleworkers, just like when many of us were in private practice. We logged our hours routinely and laboriously for every bit of work that we did and the time that we spent on it. That goes to the supervisor of the employee for review, and it goes into our database. If the privilege is suspended or terminated for any reason, that action will be reported to the HR office so that we can collect yet additional data to enable us to properly evaluate the program going forward. The proposed policy also specifies that it's the continuing duty of the office leadership to monitor and to assess the performance of all telecommuters. That should go without saying because that's a continuing duty on the part of supervisors of employees who are personally present or employees who are out in the field, to which this policy, of course, doesn't apply at all. Nonetheless, it's expressly stated with respect to those who would be working in the home place. Insofar as an ad hoc policy is concerned, it's retained, it's defined. It can't be piggybacked on top of regularly scheduled commuting, which is to say, if you are approved for regular scheduled commuting and request ad hoc commuting, that must be denied you. And also, any approvals by an office director, and an office director alone under this proposed policy may approve ad hoc telecommuting without going up the line. It must be reported to HR, so once again, we can get the data points and gain a better understanding of how the program is being used. My view is that the proposed policy errs on the side of being perhaps overly restrictive. I know that this program can be beneficial. Having read the scholarship, I am disabused of the contrary notion. But I also know that customer service may in no way be degraded by maintaining any form of telecommuting program. Employee morale is important. Employee retention is also important. Once again, drawing on private sector experience, you just can't overvalue those considerations. But neither justifies a degradation in customer service. Not a bit. So if, as I suspect, provided that you approve this proposed amended program, a year from now the report shows that the program has been a positive asset to our office and to the customers it serves, we can perhaps consider whether it should be adjusted in some way or another, maybe even relaxed. I would prefer to pull back than to make it more restrictive. If only a few people apply under this proposed program, and fewer still are approved, we should probably reconsider it sooner rather than later. If productivity, it turns out, is compromised, or if access by customers or work output is in any way degraded, then obviously we should consider going in exactly the opposite direction. The options that are presented in the proposed report are that you terminate the program, or option two would be to approve it only on an ad hoc basis. Certainly those are very straightforward decisions that can be made. They, in my judgment, run afoul of the legislative declarations and the private and public sector scholarship concerning the telecommuting process. Or, as I submit, should be your preference, we can enter into the proposed new or amended policy, which have, I believe, prudent requirements for intake, for monitoring, and that impose significant restrictions, and that we can then evaluate in due course the outcomes. I suppose I should offer a disclaimer. What I have said may sound a bit harsh, and it may seem perhaps suspicious of our employees. I don't mean it to seem so. Our employees are, in my judgment and from my experience, trustworthy, and I've had that experience, and it only enforces that. But to quote a leader from not too long back, one must trust but verify. Within the New York Times article that dealt with this subject at some length today, a professor of management at San Francisco State University summed up the competing arguments that were contained within the article as follows. If you want innovation, then you need interaction. If you want productivity, then you want people working from home. I respectfully submit that the proposed policy marries the benefits of both and would urge that you adopt it. Three.
Judge Elias, Commissioner Alexander, Judge Morrison, and Judge Walker.
Mine's really a question, and it really only has to do with your ad hoc telecommuting days. First of all, I guess I don't know why people, what would be the reason that you would get ad hoc? What would come up that would make them appropriate? And the second thing is that it doesn't say in this little box who's approving them.
Yeah, it's the office director and not HR and not the administrative director. Examples of ad hoc would be trial prep. Lawyer takes files home, buries self in bedroom, prepares opening statement, closing argument, and cross-examination without any interruption before the trial begins. Less obvious ones obviously have to do with major project completion, also a circumstance where you have a great deal of work you could actually do effectively remotely, and as I say, a plumbing line breaks and you have to babysit the home while the plumber's there.
All right, but in some of these columns, thank you, it says administrative director designee approval, if you look down at approval authority in that. So you're saying that that applies to the ad hoc, that that sentence would also apply to the ad hoc, or should that sentence also be in the ad hoc?
The administrative director or designee approval applies to the regularly scheduled telecommuting program as proposed in subdivision B of the proposed amended policy 8.9, whereas subpart C applies to the ad hoc remote work portion. Now, it is true that reports accumulated quarterly, I believe, reports are made to the administrative director relative to the frequency with which the program is used on an ad hoc basis.
So somebody can't every month take their two-day ad hoc?
With their director's approval, they can. And their director must report that to the administrative director so that we can scrutinize exactly what's going on. I mean, quite obviously, I can't approach this from the perspective of cynicism. But plainly, if you have after the end of a year a circumstance in which someone is routinely taking 2 days off per month, then that warrants a reconsideration of the ad hoc structure. The reason for 2 days, it seems to me, is to afford office directors some discretion in situational or temporary bases, not to tie their hands in how they best choose to manage their offices. My view is, presumptively, that it won't be abused, but because of the reporting requirements, we'll have data to indicate if I'm mistaken.
Thank you.
Commissioner Alexander.
Mine was about the same thing. If somebody has a regular scheduled telecommute day and they have an emergency, why is it they couldn't ad hoc that day if they have work that they could actually do?
Yeah, I suppose I should answer it this way. Nothing in the ad hoc or the regular telecommuting policy should be understood to restrict employers in situations about which we could not possibly legislate every contingency from taking appropriate action. Emergency for one person might not be an emergency for another. But to answer your question specifically, I had a frank concern that the present policy was enabling a piggyback process, even if only in justification, that was unwholesome. And I wanted to be sure that that didn't get carried over in anything I proposed to you.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. Let's suppose you have a program in which X number of days per month are authorized, and there's some pretty tight controls so that X really means X. But you also have an ad hoc program that is really not terribly well defined. What if a person who's receiving the benefit, the privilege of regularly scheduled telecommuting, also is gone considerably more than what would be authorized under that, and the justification that's ultimately offered is, well, those days are ad hoc. That's not something, it seems to me, should be part of our starting point.
Thank you.
Well, I'll go down the line. Mary Beth Todd.
Okay. I had a question. I don't know if Judge Jarr or Mr. Couch, if you can answer this. While we want to be productive and innovative, I can see that offering a telecommute policy by itself could be innovative. We talked about in the report, you know, kind of retention issues and recruitment issues. Do we have any sense of, when we have done recruitments, how many applicants, you know, well-qualified applicants are inquiring about telecommute policies or looking for the ability to telecommute? Do we have anything measurable to say whether this would broaden our qualified applicant pool?
We haven't done a lot of recruitment recently, so
yeah,
I don't
true,
have any.
True, point well made.
I don't have any hard data on that. What I get is the anecdotal stuff, particularly in the tech field.
Yeah.
That, you know, that employees came to work for the AOC. This policy's been in place off and on since 2000. They've kind of relied on it, and then as the judge started his comments, you know, with the whole Yahoo thing about What are they going to do? But we haven't recruited to any extent in the last 6 or 7 years. So I don't have any hard empirical data.
My answer is the same. It's largely anecdotal. And while tech isn't the only area, tech's an obvious area, it really is part of the work culture in the tech world, particularly in the Bay Area, both because it's tech intensive and because obviously the commuting circumstances are, they needn't be described here for anybody at this table.
Yeah, and then if I just might answer, I think we do need to stay flexible, but I think we do need to have a clear policy and ensure that that policy is being followed. I think Judge Jarr, as the administrative director, needs the flexibility to be able to recruit and retain qualified employees to do the job of the administrative office of the courts. And I would certainly give great consideration to what he recommends is necessary to manage this policy while allowing that flexibility.
Thank you. Judge Jacobson.
I'd like to just echo to some extent what Kyle's just said. First of all, I'm not offended at all by the concept of telecommuting. And I think it is business specific. It won't work very well in a trial court, which is a little bit more like a restaurant. The business comes to it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have your waiters and waitresses telecommuting. That won't work too well.
Mm-hmm.
But an appellate practice is something that maybe is more flexible. The AOC is a different animal as well. And bottom line, when I look at this issue, I think it's Judge Jarr's job to run his shop. And if he's asking for option three, I'm going to make a motion to adopt option three.
I'm noting second. Your motion.
I'll second it.
Second by Judge Baker and Judge Kaufman. After Judge Walkup, it'll be Jim Fox, Judge Hull, Justice Hull, and then Judge Earl.
Thank you for the chance to comment and also for the chance to disagree with Judge Jarr's conclusions about the telecommute policy. I think it's important just to remember for a moment what sort of got this issue here, and that was that there was a perception of the telecommute policy being either abused or misused or liberally used or however you want to characterize it. It was a headline grabber, and it was not a good headline for the judicial branch. And for that, I guess we should be thankful because it got the issue here where ultimately this body can decide whether or not it's a good idea. And it seems to me that the report and some of the discussion here has focused on the peculiarities or features of the proposed policy as opposed to the underlying focus, which I think should be whether or not telecommuting as a policy advances the mission of the judicial branch and advances the mission of the AOC. And to that, I haven't heard a very good justification in my view. Some of the traditional, and I'm repeating some of the comments I made at on our telephone conference on this issue with E&P, but some of the traditional rationales for telecommuting policies really don't exist here, in my opinion. For example, it has been mentioned as a justification for telecommuting that it's a needed tool for retention of employees. Well, right now in this market, I think that retention of employees is not difficult. I'm sure there's a lot of laid-off trial court employees who would love to apply for jobs here. Second, another rationale that you usually see for telecommuting is lack of office space. You have 1,000 employees and only room for 500. You have to put them somewhere. It's okay to telecommute. You have to make that work. We don't have that problem here. We're shedding office space. The thing that I think has been lacking is, and this is something we noted when we were looking at it in the SEC report, although it was not mentioned as a recommendation anyway, but there was never an AOC-wide analysis of how the telecommuting policy was being used. We did note that one of the major problems with the AOC prior to our report was what we called the silo effect, where you had different divisions, each in their own silo, not communicating with each other. And I would want to submit to you that a way to keep that silo effect in place is to allow people to work at home instead of being in the workplace together, having some collaborative synergy in their interactions. Turning to the the current status of telecommuting, I think that the report in our agenda underreports the extent or use of telecommuting. So, for example, it's reported in our agenda materials that currently, I'll just pick several, that CFCC has 3.76% of the AOC's telecommuting population, that CJR has 1.53%, and that the Legal Services Office has 1.3% of the total AOC staff. But that doesn't really paint the full picture of what is happening division by division. So I asked Jody Patel to give me information about what is the current number of staff in those divisions so we can see what percent are already telecommuting, and it's a little bit different when you look at it that way. So legal services, for just as an example to be consistent with my earlier statement, has 51.4 regular employees. 11 of them are telecommuting right now, which equates to 21.4% of their office is telecommuting now. CJR has 62 and a fraction regular employees with 11 telecommuting. That's 17% of CJR that telecommutes on some basis currently. CFCC has 68 regular employees, 27 telecommute. So that's almost just a hair under 40% of that office that is telecommuting at the current time. Now, whether that's a good idea or not, I disagree with Judge Jarre's conclusion that the proposed policy is restrictive. I think what is going on is actually liberal and unnecessary to advancing the mission of the AOC. And let's not push under the table one of the reasons why this discussion is important, and that is the perception of the public and the trial courts about how AOC operates. To allow employees to work at home one day a week or whatever it turns out to be if that policy is adopted, it begs the discussion to put in the report that the employees of AOC view this as a takeaway if they don't get to continue with the telecommute policy. Because, for example, every court here in the state has lost employees. My court's gone from 180 employees in 2009 to 97 last week. And I think if you were to put a headline in there and have the court employees read it, AOC discusses again liberal telecommute policy, it's not going to go over very well. And I have not seen a principled analytical explanation for why it is that AOC should be treated, its employees should be given a benefit essentially that does not exist for the customers, as Judge Jarre put, that the AOC is serving. So if I was to weigh in with the options that have been stated in the report, there are some instances where telecommuting is appropriate, in my view. One of them is obviously if you have an injured employee or someone with a medical need and you need to wean that employee back to the workforce based on medical circumstances, that would be appropriate. I also agree that there are certain ad hoc situations, some of which were described by Judge Jarre, that would certainly warrant an occasional, exceptional use of an ad hoc telecommute policy. That those kinds of things happen. But to adopt a regular one day a week or so many days per month based on no particular study other than an arbitrary selection on an unfocused explanation that telecommuting is going to help somehow the organization, I'm sorry, I don't buy that. I think that if the goal of the AOC is to advance transparency, accountability, and efficiency, that what this council should do is to terminate the telecommute policy with the exceptions of medical need and the occasional exceptional ad hoc situation. Thank you for letting me comment.
Thank you, Judge Walker. I'm going to hear from Jim Fox, then Justice Hull.
Well, like Judge Jacobson, I'm not philosophically opposed to the concept of telecommuting as long as it's strictly regulated. The one observation that I would make in my reading of the proposed amendment to the policy, I would suggest, and perhaps it's in there and I just didn't see it, but telecommuting should not be available to employees who are still on a probationary status, because the purpose of probation is to have the ability to observe what their performance is. And secondly, if there are employees who are on a performance improvement plan, they should not be eligible for telecommuting.
That's true. Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. My comments go to Ms. Todd's comments and Judge Jacobson's and Judge Walkham's. This has to do with the potential advantages of having a properly instituted telecommute policy. In 1998, I had the opportunity to invite a chamber's attorney from a justice at my court who was retiring to join me in my chambers. And as he talked to me, he said that he would like to do that, but he could not see himself doing that absent the opportunity to telecommute 2 days a week because he lived substantially outside of Sacramento. Over the past 13 years, he has been absolutely invaluable to me. On no occasion has he not kept up with his work. No occasion have I not been able to get a hold of him, either by email or by telephone, not only during office hours but after office hours. And frankly, I don't know what I would have done quite without him in the intervening years. He has recently announced his retirement, and in looking last fall for his replacement, by far and away the best recruit that came to my chambers was a young woman with two small children, and she and her husband also live outside of Sacramento, and she asked if she could telecommute 2 days out of the week. Now, she didn't tell me she would not take the job if she could not, but it was obviously very important to her and to her family that she have this opportunity. My response to her was, as long as you keep up with the work, as long as you're available when I need to talk to you, I have no objection to that. So I don't know enough about the AOC operation to know if there are comparable situations at the AOC. But I do know that in my personal experience, I would have lost two exceptionally valuable employees in all likelihood had I not been able to offer a telecommute program. And under the circumstances, it seems to me that one that is properly circumscribed is not just a convenience to employees. It's not an invitation to abuse. It really can help you obtain and retain employees who are very valuable to your organization. Thank you.
Judge Earl, then Judge Baker.
Thank you. I think the distinction that I see from Justice Hull's comments are that the report we have before us do not establish the true need for a telecommute policy, other than establishing that it would be a good tool for employee morale. I'm not sure we really do have a retention or recruitment problem within the AOC. And it does not address whether or not there's an appropriate fiscal benefit to allowing telecommuting, whether, as Judge Walker pointed out, there's some real estate costs to be saved or some other financial incentive, or there's a problem with reduced absenteeism that should be corrected. So I think the report is lacking in that type of analysis, and I think the bigger issue is one of perception. And if I were a voting member, I would say that the AOC should not have a telecommuting policy unless it relates to the things that Judge Walker mentioned, which is to deal with medical issues or those ad hoc issues that Judge Jarre spoke of.
Judge Baker, Judge Hardcastle, and Judge Ellsworth.
Thank you, Chief. I'm sensitive to the fact that there's a public perception
issue here, but I worry that the public perception of not having a telecommute policy at all would be much more damaging than having a telecommute policy. I think this is a valuable tool in the toolbox of the director and his staff. You know, we pride ourselves on being one of the more progressive branches in the entire world. I think it would be negligent for us not to have a telecommute policy. This one is very detailed. It's 7 pages long. Contains all the restrictions that go a long way, I think, to precluding misuse of the policy. And I think this is essentially a management decision, and I don't think this is the right time to be throwing tools out of our toolbox. I think telecommuting is a valuable asset that we can use to help reduce costs. We use it in all different sorts of forms. As a council, and in just a few weeks, we have an EMP-RUPRO joint meeting where we're meeting in 3 different regions, a meeting that would be considerably more expensive if we all commuted to San Francisco and met here. And that's I see that as a form of telecommuting. And I think that the AOC should have the liberty of using this sort of policy whenever it can to reduce cost and promote good employee morale.
Yep. Judge Hardcastle, before you begin, Judge Jarrett would like to do a brief clarification.
Actually, to respond to Mr. Fox's inquiry, on the third page near the top, the second full paragraph indicates that employees with performance, attendance, or other work-related deficiencies will not be approved. It was the intention in creating that language to have a sort of a cover-all for anybody who's viewed as being in a work deficiency circumstance. Insofar as the probationary employee issue is concerned, I believe that the one-year eligibility breakout addresses that, but I defer to Ken.
Yeah, we're an at-will employer, so it's sort of like perpetual probation.
That's true.
Moving it to 1 year doubled the time before an employee is eligible to participate.
Judge Hardcastle, then Judge Ellsworth.
Thank you, Chief. I don't really want to weigh in on micromanaging Judge Jarr. I think he has to have the discretion to run the operation as he sees fit. But I did want to bring sort of a message back from the field, and he made the comment about employee morale, and I think we have to remember the branch includes more than AOC employees. And one of the things that I've seen when I've traveled, and since June, I've been to 14 different courts. And at every one of those courts, I've heard from staff, and one of the complaints of staff is they feel that with the cuts and the effect on the branch, that hasn't been felt by the AOC. That is their perception. May not be reality, but that's certainly their perception. And so when you're talking about employee morale, you're setting up a separate policy for another part of the branch. And I think that just needs to be considered because, as Judge Jarr pointed out, trial court employees don't have that option. My clerk can't telecommute despite the fact that that might be very convenient for her. So I just throw that out as a message from the field.
Judge Ellsworth and Justice Miller.
If I'm to vote today, I would be inclined to vote no. But if I were to vote in a few months from now, my vote might be different. And here's why. I believe at this point a moratorium on telecommuting might be the proper way to handle this. We come from a history of perceived or not abuse or misuse. The reality is that there was silos of departments, and in those silos there seemed to be reported to us as SEC members favoritism and differences between who got and who didn't get. And we had people telecommuting as far away as foreign countries. I realize that you have looked at this, Judge Jarr, and I don't saddle Ms. Patel or Judge Jarr with what happened in the past, except for to this extent. We need to start with a clear demarcation from the past. And it may be that we start now by saying, let's stop having any telecommuting and observe where it is needed. Then Judge Jarr
brings that to the council, who can have oversight. And in incremental steps, we look at instituting a possible plan that will wean us completely off and placing all of this from a non-micromanaging type of a situation. But in such a glaring problem area, I am a little concerned that we would even shift to this point with saying things like ad hoc and people can use it a day here or a day there. And I understand, I think, quite frankly, that in the long run, I think telecommuting can be really a great thing for the AOC and for other areas. We, you know, when we were able to do it in the courts, there were some great things that came about. But I do think that it has to be done incrementally. And I think it has to be done with a lot of oversight. And that's from my experience on SEC, I'm talking loudly about that.
Judge Ellsworth, I just might, by clarification, because I'm afraid that I may have left with a misimpression. My view is that should the council choose to adopt the proposed amendments, I would be starting from zero with respect to every application. In other words, there's no notion in my mind of entitlement.
And I appreciate that, and maybe I can clarify. It's not just a matter of – I appreciate that. That does help me in my understanding of where you're coming from. But it also I believe that an analysis needs to be done not just of the applicant, but whether it is of use to you to even institute any type of policy and to what extent. I believe at some point that the policy, at least in part, I can get behind, but I'm not at this point.
Justice Miller, then Judge So, then Judge Kaufman, and Justice Baxter.
I kind of wanted to, well, when I read this, I called Judge Jarre and I said, okay, how's it any different than what it already is other than going from 2 days to 1 day? And he walked me through that. And what I was most concerned about is that the slate was wiped clean, that we started with a whole new policy and that we started from ground zero. And my understanding, as he just confirmed, is everyone's going to have to apply. Everyone's going to have to justify why there's a benefit to them and their department and the AOC and the customers they serve, which is the trial court and the public, for them to telecommute. And from the policy and from my discussion with him, that is what he told me that he intends to do. So do I think we have to perform an oversight role? Absolutely, and I think that's what we've done by seeing the different options that he has provided, commenting on it, maybe amending it a little here and there to add some clearer language. But I think we are performing that oversight role. On the other hand, I want to balance that with he's been hired, he's in this position. In some sense, we have to allow him to manage his business and his employees. And in a year from now, when we do the first director's evaluation that was, I think, done here the last 14 years, when we as a council and the chief do that, guess what? That's going to be one of the areas that we're going to be concerned about. I mean, I guess if we wanted some further oversight, maybe we have a report back in 3 months or 6 months. But my biggest concern was is that they have to justify telecommuting, and they have to have a legitimate reason, and that there's oversight of it. And I have to trust him, and I have to trust the staff. And if they don't do the job, then our oversight role in that regard is pretty clear.
Judge So, and then Judge Kaufman.
I want to be sure I understand the process. As I understand it now, this is a complete reset. An employee is going to apply to telecommute. That's going to work its way up the chain. It's got to be approved by a supervisor. It's got to be approved by a director. And then ultimately it has to be approved by you. They have to make a compelling case for telecommuting. Am I right so far?
Expressly, the policy indicates that the director of the office that has the employee would be the first point of contact formally. How office directors choose to delegate preliminary screening to managers and supervisors, I frankly believe, should be in the hands of the director, because the ultimate office determination to support or decline it is with that person, and then it moves forward, yes, as you've indicated.
So there is no right to telecommute?
No, it's a privilege.
And that is something that you're going to report. First of all, you're going to report back to the council what areas people are really requesting to telecommute in, how many, what their job duties are, and what their function is, correct?
Well, certainly the proposal is that in a year's time we give you a comprehensive report so that you see the entire picture.
I'm not sure a year, you know, a year is a long ways away. And, you know, I think a lot of us would be a lot more comfortable with more frequent periodic review, at least a report.
Well, and I anticipated that by observing that were this policy put in place, in my view, at least I've spoken informally with Ken Couch about it and with, frankly, the division chiefs as well as some directors, is we need to have a reasonable period of time during which those who have organized their lives around what they have been authorized to do can change, because it will mean less telecommuting for those who are telecommuting more than one day a week. And to the extent that they're bundling, they'll have to unbundle. But once that is done, while the applications are going in, we'll have an array of an initial set of staff for whom telecommuting has been approved, and we will know where they're from and with what frequency they've been authorized to telecommute, and disseminating that information to you at the outset would be a fairly straightforward task. If you chose, we could do that.
Judge Kaufman, Justice Baxter, then Judge Brandon.
We as a council are in a transition period where we were in crisis. We had no director. We had no leadership, in a sense, and now we've hired one. And in a time of crisis, a policy-making body has to step in and take care of day-to-day operations. We're not there anymore. We've hired an ADOC, and he has to deliver the policy that we instruct. We're micromanaging. We need to stop that. We can't get involved in the day-to-day operation of AOC. Whether there is a telecommuting policy or not, I have no strong feelings one way or another. But the ADOC and his staff have to tell us what they think is appropriate for that organization to run appropriately. I mean, how far down are we going to dig down? The next argument is going to be, should AOC buy blue pens or black pens? Let's stop. It's Judge Darr's problem, as Justice Miller says. In a period of time, he'll come back and tell us what the policy is. Is it working? If it's not working, then we have options. And if it is working, then we move on. But we can't spend time micromanaging AOC. We wouldn't let Judicial Council AOC micromanage our courts. It's a quid pro quo. We have to stop somewhere.
Justice Baxter, then Jeff Brandlin.
I agree with Judge Kaufman. I think if I were in Judge Jarre's position, I may not come out with this particular recommendation. I think I'd be more restrictive. But I'm not in that position, and I think we owe deference to the administrative director. The only concern I have is, as I understand the plan, this really is on a trial basis, is it not? In other words, if you decided 6 months from now that as good as it looked on paper, it's just not working out right, you would want the authority to scrap it.
As things stand right now, my view is the council has preempted the field insofar as the administrative director's discretion is concerned relative to the formulation of a policy, and that your next direction will establish the limitations on my authority in that regard. Prior to the SEC process, that was, in my view, within the province of the administrative director, with appropriate responsibility to report to the council so that the council could act if it chose to. Following today's meeting, depending on the policy that's established, I'll take my direction from the council. If the council restricts my authority to act with respect to the policy until further reporting or the like has occurred, I'll respect that, obviously. If the council sets, provided that it approves the proposal that I'm offering, the proposal and sets a date for reporting or dates for reporting and does not otherwise restrict the authority of the administrative director in the interim, if it is, in my judgment, a policy that is running afoul of the stated objectives, I would view myself as having regained the authority to terminate it.
So it would be on a trial basis then?
plainly it's on a trial basis with me, and I know it's proposed to be on a trial basis with the council.
Yeah. See, the one thing that concerns me, I mean, the only reservation I have about adopting a policy is that when you adopt a policy, then people rely on that policy. People are hired relying on that policy. And so the term policy itself bothers me, because it may turn out in a year that we unanimously agree that this just isn't working. It's creating too much dissension within the branch or whatever. So I would much prefer that it be in the context of a trial, not a... I mean, when you have a policy, it seems as though, to me, you get a vested right in that policy. You took this job versus another job because of the right to telecommuting. And then what happens when that's taken away? So as long as this is viewed as a trial effort, an experiment, subject to review at a later date, both by you and the council, then I would certainly think the deference to the administrative director is appropriate.
May I just add, in response to the points that Justice Baxter made, that I had a particular sensitivity about certain language in the present policy, that it could be read, perhaps a tortured reading, as creating, at least perhaps over some period of time, some sort of property interest or right. So the proposed amendment to the policy includes and adds language in two or three different locations that stresses that this is a privilege and a privilege alone, and that to read or paraphrase one portion of it, either the employee or the AOC may terminate participation in the remote work program at any time for any reason or no reason at all. Now, I added that additional language because my memory of employment law is such that one can never be too cautious about making it plain and clear that there's absolutely no vesting that occurs, implied or expressed. My view is right now we have a policy that does the same thing, though I am not sanguine about its verbiage, as I frankly am, if I can say so myself, about what's proposed.
Judge Brandlin, then Judge McCabe, then Judge O'Malley.
I just wanted to echo Judge Ellsworth's comments about concerns about appearances, and Judge Hardcastle's comments about the perception that trial employees have regarding certain benefits that AOC employees would have that trial employees certainly wouldn't have. And I'm a little heartened in the knowledge that this is a trial or a pilot project as opposed to a ironclad policy from this day forward. But I still question whether or not enough business justification for the policy as suggested, or the trial policy as suggested. It's certainly better than what we had, but I do have great confidence in Judge Jarre.
Judge McCabe.
Thank you, Chief McCabe from Merced. First, I'm cringing at the suggestion that it's not our job or we should defer. We are the policy-making body of the branch, period. And that's part of your job. And I'm not saying this to chastise anybody. It's just me being plain speaking again. That's our job. This council occupied this field August 12th when they adopted the SEC recommendation dealing with this very subject. So any suggestion otherwise makes me cringe. Having said that, I'm not opposed to the idea of telecommuting. In fact, I think there are advantages. I'm not sure private sector to public sector is an equivalent match. I'm not sure using the Bay Area, which is so heavy in tech and lends itself to telecommute, is an appropriate match with the AOC and the judiciary. I'm not certain of a lot of things in the world. I was hoping when I read this material that we'd have a formula and I'd know it when I saw it, and I still don't know it, but I've been drinking a lot of soda today, so that's just me. It strikes me as one we're not going to know until we try this. So the trial aspect I'm comfortable with. I have reservations about the regular. I tend to lean towards ad hoc, and there's a lots of ad hoc purposes. But again, you won't know until we do it. So I'm game to go down that road and see where it leads us. Remember, you know, what is happening in the private sector and now in the public, is it contracting? Is it? You know, Yahoo is banning it because of alleged abuses. And it's not, again, I'm not alleging that ASC employees would intentionally abuse this. I know they've gone through a lot, and they've whittled down under some very extreme circumstances. But the folks in leadership, you've got about 1,000,002 things going on at one time. We are going from crisis to crisis. And I appreciate the forms. I'm a form guy, and so I was really making my day, and I was feeling good. Wow, it was one form after another. But in the end, the result is that you've got a number of forms. You're going through this process. It's the follow-up, and it takes time. And it's really going to be critical that this council engages in that process when you bring it back. A year, I'm not sure that a year is really necessary to develop a reasonable period. I was hoping for 6 months, but you know what? Beggars can't be choosers. You know, I can live with a year if that's what it's going to be. But I'm stating my reservations on the regular, but I do think telecommute can help the industry. So thank you for allowing me this opportunity.
Judge O'Malley?
I also agree with the prospect of allowing employees to telecommute. I have many, many good friends in the public sector, not in the private sector, who telecommute. They are wonderful, intelligent women who are raising families and who are doing an excellent job at what they do, and are very valuable to the public work that they do. So it's not just private sector, and it's not just the Bay Area. So I'm all for it so long as it is properly monitored. And I think that Judge Jarre will do that. I think that here is a person who was had a very negative first impression of telecommuting, who's done some reading and research and has talked to people who actually are experienced in that area, who have given him another side to it. And so I think he's skeptically open-minded, if I can describe it that way. And I think that somebody with his perspective is going to be looking at this as objectively as anyone can, and be monitoring this, knowing the sensitivity and the exposure that this area has brought on to the branch. I think that it would be horrible to lose such a tool in our toolkit, as Judge Baker has described it, and that, again, with proper monitoring, it can be very effective. So whether or not we officially terminate the old program and begin a new pilot program, not to call it a policy to be adopted, but a pilot program, might solve our issues with this, and to revisit this pilot program in 6-9 a year, whatever would be. It's going to take some time to end the current program, so I think 6 months is probably too short. 9 months to a year might be more realistic, having the wind down of getting people again to compact what they've been used to and to adjust to a new program, should they even be accepted into the new program, which they may not. We're starting anew. So I don't know if we need to make an amended motion to add, like, option four, which would be to terminate the old program and to begin a pilot program under all the guise of the requirements laid out in option three.
Justice Miller, you have a friendly amendment.
So I'd like to propose that we change it from a policy that there be an amendment to the motion by Judge Jacobson, that it be a pilot program rather than a policy, that in 6 months the administrative director will report to E&P and provide us with the statistics about how many people have been accepted down through your form, so that we have that information, report back to E&P, and I will provide that to the council. And at 12 months, that we have a full discussion at the council meeting about its effectiveness to determine whether or not we should amend it or convert it into a policy, and that it also be a part of your director's evaluation. So that's my friendly amendment.
That is so friendly. Who could say no to that?
I second.
Second by Judge Jackson and by Edith Mathai, and taken by the original mover, Judge Jacobson. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.